Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Dax, Quark, Tom, and Harry. Your hosts today are my fellow Trek actors, Terry Farrell, Robert Duncan McNeil, or Robbie McDunk, or Ramek, and myself, Garrett Wong. For the complete and amazing version of this podcast, please check out patreon.com/the Delta Flyers and sign up today to become a patron of this wonderful, wonderful podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to both of you. Hi, Terry. Hi, Robbie.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey. What's going on?
Look at
What's
you happening? Guys. You look so glowing. You just both look glowing.
Oh,
I love
thank
it.
You.
Oh,
Robbie.
Thank you.
Some stuff happening on your neck of the woods?
Yeah. Oh, some stuff. Yeah. If you have a septic tank and you've had a bad day with it, that's what's happening with me.
I'll
just leave it at that.
All right. I feel like you've been talking so much about how replicators work. You're saying, yes. Like at some point, something has to be
interesting,
right? And so I feel like you constantly talking about that sort of somewhat manifested.
I jinxed myself.
You kind of did. You talked about
replicators. I jinxed my septic.
Yeah.
As an ex-science officer, I have to say there is a dynamic to this situation where you put enough in, it's got to come out. So
yes.
You put enough in.
There was no manifesting other than creating it physically.
Yeah. That is definitely science.
Yes.
And you had a big Christmas, so you had a lot of visitors.
We had a lot of visitors. So
you can't ask them to go outside.
The more you put in, the more it comes out. That's how it goes. I got to say something, though. I am wearing the new T-shirt.
Look at that.
Do you see this?
Mm-hmm.
For Journey Through the Wormhole
video version.
Give us a little spin.
Let me describe it for the people who don't have video. Okay. It says on the pocket, it says Journey Through the Wormhole, and it's kind of offset, like each journey is on top, then you have through, then wormhole. But you have three colors being utilized. On the back, Robbie's turning around now to show us his back. It's sort of using negative space because the space station has no print whatsoever, but all around it is printed different names of characters, things that people said on DS9 that were, you know, noteworthy, and they're in a circular formation all the way around, and it's a really beautiful looking shirt.
It's a beautiful shirt. Well, I love
it. And you know what? Rebecca did a great job of the words look like the wormhole.
Yes, they do.
And the negative space being the space station.
That's
so it's like the wormhole's even bigger.
Right. It's bigger than anything else, right?
The wormhole. It's really great design.
It's a great design.
Very cool.
And
it's a great design. If you're a Patreon patron and this is one of your perks, you're going to get it very soon.
Right.
And if you don't get it as a perk, you can go to our store, theDeltaFlyers.org.
.org. Yeah. And just go to our store there. Merch
you can buy one.
Can
They're great.
Them. They're super,
But join
super
our
cool.
club. We have fun.
Yes, we do, don't we?
We do have so much fun in our
Tell
next.
Tell
them
about it, Terry, because you've done the Zooms, the monthly Zooms with our prophets. You're getting into the.
I'm getting the into club. It, and it's really fun. It's you know, it's like a little secret wormhole society.
Yes, exactly. We are like a wormhole.
The SWS, Secret Wormhole Society.
Exactly.
Okay.
But really nice people. Very nice people. It's a very down to earth. I don't know. It feels like if we had a bonfire, that would be just, that would just add to it. But that's how it feels. It's like we're all just getting together, hanging around around a campfire, having a good time.
Yeah.
We've talked about having
a third, right?
It's very soon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We have talked about the Delta Flyers hosting an adult summer camp kind of experience where we sit around a bonfire and wouldn't that be a blast?
I would so be into that.
Do an away mission with the Delta Flyers. Come
Robbie,
on.
Robbie, you put a pause
I do
after
this.
You said hosting an adult. There was a pregnant pause after adult. I was like, what? Adult
film
festival? What are you talking about? Okay. Adult
You're scaring
summer.
Me.
Adult
I got scared.
Much more.
Calm down.
Much more family friendly.
I thought Robbie was going
I could
down
teach
a dark
yoga.
Alley. Yes. Oh my gosh.
We could each teach something. Armin could do a little seminar.
Robbie could teach motorcycle maintenance.
Well, we'd have to ask him.
What?
Could you?
Robbie could teach motorcycle stuff.
Armin could do Shakespeare.
Yes, Armin could do Shakespeare.
Robbie, what could you teach?
The other thing we talked about, though, is doing classes that our characters were whatever our specialty was, like
neuroscience,
piloting or science, and then training like Starfleet, and then doing an away mission where you have to go in away teams.
How about
the summer camp? It would be fun.
We have
the spitballing's fun.
What about we have somebody come in that is a trumpet teacher? And they bring trumpets in to teach the class to play the beginning of the DS9. You know, like that would be kind of cool.
Horn. French horn.
Oh, French horn? Is it French horn and not trumpet? Then French horn. We have a French horn teacher come in and teach them.
We can do Delta Flyers summer camp and have an orchestra. We can basically, it'll be like band
camp. Well, the goal is to play the intro theme music, which is beautiful. The more I listen to it, the more I love the DS9 intro theme music. It's so
good. You guys, we actually know two scientists.
Yes, we could have a real scientist there.
Yes, we do.
Who are you talking about?
There's Dr. Aaron, and I can't think of her last name right now.
And okay, so okay.
And Muhammad.
Dr. Noor, yes. Muhammad,
yes. Dr. Noor. Mm-hmm. What if they came? Because they could totally do a fun conversation. Yeah. And then she's great at cocktails, too. We'd had fun doing that on the ship.
Let's do it. I didn't know she joined you on that.
People can go to the camp, and when they go home, they can say, and then one time at Star Trek camp, we did science. And then at Star Trek camp, like that. You can do that.
Oh, look at that American pirate.
We can all wear red shirts with a communicator on them. Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is a great idea.
But we're the teachers, so we have to wear our colors. Like, were you gold? What color were you? Were you red, Robbie?
I was gold. Robbie's red. Yeah.
I was red, yeah. For a second, I was like, what color was I? Yeah.
Well, ours would have to be, well, anyway. Oh my gosh, that's a whole nother conversation. Yes. We need to have a Zoom and include summer Armin, camp. And it will brainstorm the four of us.
It's going
to
happen. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. Even if it's just a couple of days, even if it's like
a long weekend is perfect. Because otherwise, it's too expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Okay.
Long weekend, like a 4-day, sort of a 4-day camp.
Yeah. Then, like you check in Friday and leave Monday morning.
Okay. I can see that. All right. Let's start
this week's episode.
It's Battle Lines.
Yeah.
Battle lines. It's funny. Okay. In my notes, I wrote battle line with the singular, not the S. And I thought, my gosh, I'm turning into my mother. She always like forgets the plural or the singular. She'll mix those up all the time. Being an immigrant, though, you know, not knowing.
Oh,
that.
So be kind to your mother.
I am.
Give birth to you. To that big head.
Be kind to your mother. Always be kind to your mother.
Yeah, that big head. Holds you know a what? Information. There's only. But you almost killed your mother.
It's just Terry Farrell that can put us in line. Like no one is able to put Robbie and I in line.
Absolutely.
I still remember before we started recording today, it flashed through my memory that one recording, Robbie comes on, he's chewing his gum. And Terry was like, what are you doing, Robbie? And Robbie's like, what? Take that gum out. And Robbie's like, yes, ma'am.
Just like that.
Yes.
It was so good. But only Terry puts us in line. Nobody has disciplined us like that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ever.
If you want to go even deeper into Voyager and or Deep Space Nine, check us out at Patreon. We have tiers ranging from $3 to $260 a month. Fun perks, including all bonus segments, like our ratings of the episodes, winner and loser picks for the episodes, our ideas for a missing scene for each episode, and answering Patreon member submitted questions.
You can watch the video version of the podcast and see reaction clips from the hosts as they watch and react to the episodes in real time. Plus, You can participate in Patreon polls for the bonus segments.
We have guest interviews, monthly blooper reels, birthday shout outs on the podcast. You can even get autographs and cool swag mailed right to you.
Plus, we have monthly Zooms where you can join us and Armin or Terry for a relaxed discussion and Q&A. Go to www.patreon.com/thedeltaflyers/membership to check out what we have to offer and pick a tier.
Terry, I'm going to do my limerick for battle lines.
Oh, I'm so
plural.
Excited.
Go.
I can't
did
wait
you
to
write,
hear it.
Did you come up with anything this time?
Oh, you did. Yeah, poetry? Okay. I love Terry's poetry is like real poetry. Mine
is
like,
ours is like gimmicky poetry. So let's go with Robbie's limerick.
I'll start with my limerick. Here we go. For battle lines, the limerick synopsis goes a little something like this. Kaiopaka comes to visit and adventures underway through the wormhole. She wants to go play. But the aliens keep killing, their death wish self-fulfilling. But O'Brien's magnetomer really saves the day.
Yeah.
I think that was spectacular. What are you talking about?
Very tight.
I got magnetomer in there. I love that he invented a magnetomer.
Yeah. Magnetomer.
He invented this
thing. Even that you can say it without...
Without bumbling it.
Stuttering. Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
I actually wrote it out phonetically because I wanted
you did?
To make sure. Yes.
Oh, look at you.
I was going to screw that up if I didn't.
Well, he's a smart man.
He is. Okay.
I'm a planner.
He prepares well. All right, here we go. My haiku for battle lines. Kai shows up for tour, destined to pass through wormhole. Eternal microbes.
Nice. That is profound.
Thanks.
It is profound.
I don't think I'm going to elevate this.
Let's move. All right. Let's hear it.
I have no doubt you will.
Okay. Kira struggles with her anger, her actions mirrored in present danger. Two sides fighting to be right. This battle has no winner with might. Fairness and care explained, wasted on egos inflamed. Opaka on a new mission. Our heroes back to first position.
Wow.
That's good.
That was really good.
Elevated us again. You have real poetry.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you. I think that all three of us really contributed.
Yes.
Like, I think we got 10 out of 10 this time.
If you people just listen to the poems, they would get this episode.
I'm going to say right now, I think we're done. I don't think we have to say anything else. We are finished.
We've covered
this
whole episode.
We've covered everything.
Love
we don't
you
have
guys.
To talk. I see you guys are the best.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Okay. Here we go. Teleplay. Teleplay by Richard Danis and Evan Carlos Summers.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
Teleplay, but they wrote this teleplay.
Yes.
Story by Hillary J. Bader.
Yes. Can I talk about the teleplay people real quickly?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is really interesting. Evan Carlos Summers, he came in and he pitched an idea to them. And evidently he didn't do that well in the pitch session. But it was Ira who told, I think it was Michael Piller. Ira told Michael Piller, I trust this guy, Evan Carlos Summers. I think we should give him an assignment to write the teleplay for Battle Lines. And so he was a trainee at the time, I think is what it was. So he was just in the room.
When Ira was a supervising producer.
Yeah, he wasn't running the show.
Yes.
Yeah?
But after he wrote this teleplay, they hired him on the writing staff. So he got, this was
that's
his.
That's why I haven't heard of him yet.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's exciting.
So it's a really cool story. Yeah, because like, you know, I mean.
What about poor Richard Danis?
I don't know a thing about Richard, unfortunately. Yeah. So yeah.
Nobody cares
no
about
one cares
Richard
about
Danis.
Richard at all, unfortunately.
Evan got all the glory.
He did.
Directed by Paul Lynch.
Yes.
My good friend Paul Lynch.
And this is the last episode he directs, by
what?
The way. Yes. That's what I saw in Memory Alpha. He doesn't direct another DS9 after this.
What happened? He directed most of your episodes and then suddenly, boom, he's out.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder if he like...
Which episode was this? Was this 12?
Battle...
Something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
But so there you go. Yeah, he probably directed a third of your episodes at this point. And then suddenly,
but then he might maybe have his green card expired
or something. I don't know. Who knows? Right?
Who knows?
We start this episode in the commander's office. We have Dax, O'Brien, and Sisko. And interesting enough, O'Brien has located some personal files of the last Cardassian prefect. And so you see this laptop monitor on Sisko's desk with an image, and it says Kira Nerys on there, but it's long-haired Kira Nerys. Did you notice that, guys? There was
It was like more like the first the pilot when she
This hair went past her shoulders to like her chest area. That's how long this hair was, and her
So then it's a wig.
Yes, it's got to be a wig, but they're saying that this is old school Kira.
Young
Kira Nerys.
Yes.
So they're looking at this file, and Kira walks in at the exact same time that O'Brien asks Sisko if he should warn Kira before she sees this file. And she says, well, what's this about? And so she says she's a big girl. She can handle
it. Yeah, I'm a big girl.
Dax and Miles leave. They leave the office. And Kira basically stays behind to look at this information, this file on that chip that Sisko
had. Did you notice the computer, by the way, had like a chunk out of it? It was like a weird shape. I've never seen a computer like this. It looked like a Starfleet.
The screen had a chunk
It kind of did a weird shape. I've never seen one like this.
Is it a Cardassian laptop then?
I don't know what it is. Cardassian. Maybe that's why it had a weird shape.
Yeah. I didn't notice that.
Well, they would have done it on purpose, right? It would have been a purposeful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It was just a weird laptop. It was just an odd. I'd never seen one like that before.
Right. So it may not have been Starfleet then.
Maybe not.
No, okay. I think that's the whole point.
Right.
Yeah.
That is the whole point. Sisko walks out to ops.
Yeah. He steps out there and Bashir calls to say, basically he lets Sisko know that Kai Opaka has arrived for a visit.
Unannounced. This is like a surprise thing.
Total surprise. Yeah. Bashir says Sisko offered her a tour, invited her.
Yeah.
And so as he goes to welcome Kai Opaka, Kira comes in and she's not a big girl, like she said. She's very upset.
She's so offended.
The Cardassians called her a minor operative she just ran errands. Oh,
she was a gopher, a minor operative gopher is all she was.
Yes.
Sisko calms her down by telling her to come join him to welcome the Kai aboard. All right.
Yes.
We're in the promenade.
Huge honor. Yes. He did that on purpose, knowing that
this would mean a lot to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're feeling minimized.
Nanad did a good job, though. She pivoted very quickly from totally offended to, the Kai's here, right?
She's a good actress.
By the way, my son is named Kyle, and his nickname is Kai.
Oh,
that's
really?
That's right. That is your son's nickname.
Yeah, Kai. We call him Kai. Yeah.
And he came before this show. You didn't name him.
He came 94, so maybe it was inspired by Kai Opaka. Maybe, even though I didn't watch the show.
Yeah.
But I just knew.
There
spiritually.
It is. Spiritually.
You knew. Yes. Another manifest.
It was manifestation. It was destiny. Absolutely.
Okay. So they're in the promenade. The Kai walks into the promenade, followed by Kira. And then Sisko and Bashir are lagging a bit behind. But as they walk in through that one door, you do see Odo sort of standing guard, I guess, or whatever. And then he walks away. But you also see Morn. So there's a lot going on in this scene. It's a really cool shot, I think.
Are they in the temple? Or where are they coming out of? It almost looked like they were coming out of a chapel or something.
No, they were coming through from the airlock into the main promenade, right?
I thought she was coming out of like a church environment or something.
No.
Oh, okay. I think it looks like that, though, because the way it was backlit, you don't normally see the airlock looking like that. You normally see them coming out, not inside to the airlock. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So the way they lit the airlock, you're saying it was more
kind of lighting, right?
So then Robbie thought it
seemed like a chapel to
the opening.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So Julia mentions that the Kai seems rather preoccupied, and she does. She almost looks like a zombie, and she's just kind of walking. Then she walks up to the upper level, and then she gazes out this window. Kira also notices that the Kai is deep in thought, and so Kai is just looking, and Kira says, is anything wrong? Opaka replies that she's contemplating prophecy. So very... you're not sure what
she's gotten
here.
Some kind of message and she's not telling anyone.
No, she doesn't.
There are a lot of
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
There are. Yes. And in this moment, I have to say I was thinking, is she maybe possessed by some being?
Yeah.
And we don't.
Okay.
Because I didn't remember the episode either. Yeah. Like at all.
I agree.
But right. Yeah. I thought.
But she's in a trance. Really she's her. In a trance. Yeah. She's very.
Is she in a trance?
No, it looks like she's in a trance.
It just looked like she could have been, taken over by another entity.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah,
for sure.
It was a little long for my taste. Some of these pauses, they felt awkward.
Agreed.
They felt awkward, not natural.
Like, yeah, Kira.
Yes,
Kira does find that it's interesting that the Kai is actually looking out the one viewport with the most direct view of the wormhole. Sisko says, unfortunately, one can only see the wormhole when a ship enters or exits the wormhole. And then weird scene.
What is she staring at then? She's staring like she's
well, because she knew that's where it was. That's what I thought it was.
Okay.
I thought, oh, that's very missed. She's
feeling it.
She's feeling it. Okay. But I love the look after he says that you can't see it unless a ship enters or exits. She, Kai, and Kira turn to Sisko and give him puppy dog eyes. And they're like, please. And then, so then he hails Chief O'Brien to prepare the runabout Yang Zijiang for launch. And Kira and Sisko decide that they will take Kai through the wormhole. It's a nice moment.
Did you notice?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I want to hear your
Kira thoughts. Was irritated about Julian going along.
Was she?
I didn't.
No.
Oh, yes. Now watch it back.
I did not catch
that. She wanted to have her time alone with Kai.
With the Kai.
Oh, yes. He was like, and it plays into the next episode a little bit. So I can't.
Oh, interesting.
Really?
But, yeah.
I noticed. He was very,
like a puppy. He's like a puppy.
He's like, it's a slow day. Can I come along?
And she's like serious into her, like, this is my religion. This is my way of life.
Yeah.
And we're bringing this guy along.
You know what? I didn't catch that.
Well, thank God Bashir went along. They need a doctor.
They did need a doctor, actually.
And we'll see later on, not only is he a doctor, but he's an engineer and a shuttle mechanic that can fix.
Oh, my gosh.
He can do everything.
I was blown away.
I love Bashir.
I should have taken another look at this guy.
Robbie, did Bob Picardo ever fix anything on the ship?
I never saw Bob laying down under a console trying to fix anything.
Isn't he a Yale graduate? He doesn't sit down and fix anything.
Yeah, I think Bob Picardo
brains.
I
could tell you how to fix it, but he's not going to get dirty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. He would order us.
I should say this. Did the doctor on our show, not Bob Picardo from Yale, but our doctor, he never fixed anything on the ship, right, Robbie?
He wasn't like Bashir in this episode, climbing under consoles.
No.
Oh, it was really impressive.
Did Bones ever fix anything on the ship?
No, I don't think so. They were just doctors.
No. Did Phlox on Enterprise ever fix anything on the show? Probably not either.
No.
So,
Bashir is the best doctor shuttle fixer ever.
He's a man who wears many hats, most definitely.
Okay. Where are we? Oh, we're in the airlock.
We're in the airlock. Yeah. O'Brien has the runabout ready. And before they get on, Kai sort of stares, another awkward pause.
Long pause.
He stares at O'Brien. Yeah. And then she senses something, and he's awkwardly kind of silently standing there. And she says he has a child, right?
Yeah.
And then she gives him this necklace. She takes off some necklace and hands it to him.
Yeah.
It was very odd. And, I thought it was weird, too.
That was the first weird scene.
There's no payoff. It doesn't go anywhere.
No.
Maybe in the next episode?
Maybe. No, I don't think so. Payoff
but
at all.
It was supposed to suggest, I guess, that she knew she wasn't coming back.
And yeah, so
that
this was her final. Yes.
I guess, but we don't know that yet.
Yeah. Then why not give it to Kira?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you're on the planet and...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Don't spoil it. I'm watching it in real time right now.
I guess everybody who's seen it, that's who we're talking to right now. Then I would have thought if we could just move it to the end.
Yeah. And take this. That would have been much better. I like that, Terry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, okay.
Definitely
so Apaka gives the thing. Reshoot. Let's go back and reshoot. She gives the necklace. So Brian kind of looks at it oddly and then walks away. And we go out to space and we see the shuttle depart. And I want to say this VisFX shot of the shuttle departing the ship, the way it took off, it was super well done.
Oh, good. You liked it.
I guess it was models. I don't know, but it was great.
It is
really well
I wish
done.
I remembered what stage it was, but yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Great work. Great model work on that.
So we're inside the runabout, and the very first line in that interior of the runabout scene, Sisko says, "We'll be entering the wormhole in about a minute." And according to the interwebs, Avery said incorrectly in one take. He goes, "We'll be entering the wormhole in about an hour." And the actress playing Kaiopaka, Camille, actually looked at it, pretended to look at her watch. She's like, "I don't have time for that. I got 15 minutes or something." Like, made a big joke. And made a big old joke about it. And then everyone laughed and they continued. So anyway, that's go ahead, funny. Robbie. Yes.
Yeah. So they're in the runabout. I keep wanting to call it a shuttle.
I know. It's a runabout. It's not a shuttle. Yeah. It's actually a ship. It's a full-on ship.
It's a ship. Yes. Yeah. So they're inside. And when Sisko calls back to the station and says to expect them back at 1400 hours, I immediately went, "Oh, they're not going to be back." Like, why is he saying this unless they're going to get... They just need to say this so that the ship will, or the station will go, "Oh, they're not back at 1400. Like he said, we got to go save them. I knew in that line that they were going to get stuck there.
And also that is our experience of reading so many scripts throughout our careers.
Yes.
That were their little tells that were right away.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But they go through the wormhole, another cool VisiFX shot.
Oh yeah.
Very cool. Wormhole journey.
Yeah.
As per huge.
Super colorful. Yeah.
And then they come out in the Gamma Quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that Sisko is very proud of his flying. He says something like, "That's my smoothest ride yet, Kira," or something like that.
Yeah.
He's very proud of his piloting.
If they ever make a DS9 ride, it should be going through the wormhole, right? If that becomes like a theme park
Wouldn't
kind of thing, right? Oh my gosh.
The Delta Flyers
can
build this.
It would be like Space Mountain.
Can we build this, Robbie?
Can this be our thing? Okay. We'll have a motion simulator wormhole ride.
We're nothing but ambitious. If we're nothing, we're ambitious. That's what I mean.
You know, we know some very well-heeled fans. They may be able to foot this bill.
Or we can build just a program for virtual
Virtual reality. Exactly.
There we go. Otherwise, we could just go to Space Mountain. That's more in our budget.
Software programmers
and call it the wormhole.
There you go. We could do that too. Or the people listening to this, there might be someone out there that's a really awesome, designer, software designer that could come up with this program for
us. VR wormhole. And have,
I have
make
my
sure
Oculus
that Sisko.
Already. Yeah. It's great. All charged and ready to go.
All right. So we're in the Gamma Quadrant. Cisco's very proud of his flying. And he talks about how proud he is of the station. And, it's right there next to this shortcut to the Gamma Quadrant. And it's going to be great. Down, in the future, he's kind of pitching it. And then Kira says, we probably should turn around, head back. And Kai's like, no, we can't go back. I want to see more. Mm-hmm. And then
there was
suddenly,
nothing else to see.
There was nothing there.
That's what they say. They're like,
This is it. It's just space. We haven't really explored it yet. We don't know much about it. It's just space. At that moment, a data stream comes in. Sisko says, well, let's leave a probe behind to study this data stream. And we'll deal with it when we come back sometime, but Kaiopaka wants to go now.
It's a subspace signal that he picks up, right? So it's just a stream of statistical data requesting for a reply. So it's a very, it's not really,
it's mysterious.
Yeah, it's not an SOS. It's not a, so they're just trying to figure out what it is. They don't know what it is.
I would leave a probe. I'm with Sisko. Leave a probe. Just get out of there. Right. You don't know. But Kaiopaka wants to go see it. And again, like Kaiopaka seems to have a spell over Sisko. Like she's at the promenade. Let's go through the wormhole.
The pilot.
Okay.
She touched his paw. She felt his paw. So there's
a
connection.
He's the emissary.
Yeah, he is the emissary. You're right.
But don't you think he gives in a little quick for
very quick?
I mean, honestly, she's not Starfleet. This is a dangerous thing to go check anything out with somebody who isn't military prepared.
Agreed. But with 42 minutes to tell the whole story, you can't
hurry up.
Yeah, you got to get through it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so he gives in again and decides to go take a look at where this this data stream is coming from, and then we go out to space. We see this kind of brown, pretty ugly planet. Actually, it doesn't look great. They approach this planet. They discover the signal is coming from this satellite network orbiting the planet,
But it's, can I just say one thing, Robbie? It's a moon. It's a moon and not a planet.
It's a moon, so, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I keep calling it a planet. Yes. Yeah. They do call it a moon in the thing.
Yeah, you're in space.
It's a
Well, we have a set. We have the cave sets.
Could have been a meteor.
Yeah,
that's true.
We had one last time, but now it's a moon.
We have cave sets, though, that they write to things like this. Like
that's,
a moon
That's right. And the majority of this was filmed on DS9's planetary set or moon set, which was stage 18.
Or Planet
it's all
Hell,
on 18.
Which is
Planet
Hell,
which you called it. Or Moon Hell for this episode. Yes.
But
they're
the
same rocks, no matter what it is.
Exactly. They're always the same rocks.
Yep.
But they discover this orbiting satellite network, and then Bashir picks up some kind of life signs on the planet, and they decide to move a little closer, right?
Yes, in orbit. Before that, Robbie, I just want to just throw this in there. Yeah. They actually realize what that signal was. One of the satellites is malfunctioning. So it was sending, it was basically inter-satellite communication. One satellite was requesting, you know, information from the malfunctioning one and asking for a reply. Yep. And when they move closer, continue.
Yeah, they move closer, and suddenly one of the satellites, like, fires up and starts charges, you know, engines, and starts coming at them and fires at them. And in a very exciting action sequence, they lose all power, crash land on the surface. And I thought this scene was part of the tape that they, the shake tape that they sent us on Voyager, Garrett.
No, really?
Oh, this
no,
scene.
I thought what was hilarious was the nod, like...
Oh my God, the shaking
was
incredible.
There
was
something about the way she was going back and forth on
her
the
dancer moves. It was
moves. Yeah.
It was too fluid. Okay.
That reminds me of Kate. Was. Whenever Kate did it on our show, it was like,
Robbie,
it was like,
she's a lady. There's a lady move.
Yes.
Robbie, who amongst the Voyager cast still has a copy of that shake?
I don't
tape?
Know.
Somebody
but I think
has
this scene was
one.
In it. I really do.
Oh my
I would
gosh.
Love to see that too.
Which is amazing that they said, hey, do it like this, because now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh my
no,
God.
No, that's not the
and,
way to do it.
Yeah, no, it was not the best shake sequence.
It was not great.
No, and
Nana
looked great, but it did look like more like a dance move than like a jarring all over the
whenever
place.
Whenever the shots are wide and you can see the whole body shaking, it looks bad. You have to be in a close-up, and then it's just,
tighter
it feels
shot.
More legit.
Or but, if everybody's body's moving.
Yes.
And like when we were standing in ops moving, it looked real.
Yeah.
I think those are the only wide shots that really work. But when you're sitting, and you're seeing
it's harder.
That whole
it's harder to do
arms.
When you're sitting. Yeah. That's for sure.
I think
and everybody's got to be in sync. And Kaio Paka was not shaking. She was not shaking at all. So I was like,
she's like, I'm not playing. This game.
I don't think she.
She has her own equilibrium where she doesn't. You know, she's sort of like a steadicam human being. So it doesn't really.
Like someone who,
you know, she's not gonna. No. She's unshakable. Is what she is.
And
she
not
is
only was she not shaking, but she was very calm. Like
she
everybody
was so
else
calm.
Is freaking out. And
what is she? Well, she knew just, she was fulfilling her prophecy. Her fate.
Her prophecy.
It was already written.
Yeah.
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 Mm. Yep.
Okay. So they crash. Blackout. Thud. Crash. Boom. Like that.
Yeah.
And then
it's totally black and kind of not really black. So it's a little confusing because I thought, wait a minute, is there an error in this edit or something? But if the camera pans up, right, it's the edge of the cliff. Yeah. That's what it was, right?
Yes.
How much did this look like a TOS set, right? When you saw the shuttle in the sand like that? To me, it looked like an original series episode. It was like, what the? So the smoke coming out, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They do blow an emergency hatch.
Yes, they do.
On this moon.
We
which
never
is a cool,
did that.
We no,
never
we never did.
That. Nope.
It was very cool. They blow the hatch. Cool. Sisko and Bashir come out. And then they reach back in and they lift Opaka. And she's unconscious. But her eyes are wide. Big wide eyes.
Yeah.
Like my dog Walter has crazy eyes like that sometimes.
But the way her hands were reminded me of like when an NFL player gets hit really hard and they're going through that little, you know, where their hands end up doing weird kind of things, right? They're just sort of frozen.
I have a
comment. When they've had like a concussion.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. When you get knocked out unconscious on in football, that's sometimes the hands get really weird and that's her hands are up. Well,
nerve
know,
damage.
So.
Yes. Yeah. She's got the weird hand move and the crazy eyes.
Big eyes.
They bring her out. Bashir tries to give her CPR or something. And then he doesn't save her. She dies. She's done.
This is
my problem. He couldn't save her. Don't say he didn't. It wasn't like he went, he was unable to. I don't want to save her.
But here's my problem with this scene. I mean, don't you guys see this as well? If Kai has all that crushed thrust, I mean, if that much damage, the rest of them should have all that damage too, because nobody has a seatbelt. There's no seatbelts in that.
And
in
she
that
didn't move.
She didn't move. She just stood. She
crushed
sat there.
Thoracic spine. That's
all that stuff
huge.
Was. Everything was compacted. But
I believe a heart attack.
But none
better.
Of. Yeah, but why Sisko? Why is there's no injury to Sisko? There's no injury to Bashir whatsoever. There's a little cut on Kira's arm, but that's it.
Well, she reacts big to the cut on her arm.
She does, but I don't understand.
Well, she does.
We'll get to that. but do you guys also, did you guys think that when you were watching this? Like, why isn't everyone else?
Why isn't everyone else injured?
Yeah,
I mean, it was so bad.
And
that
what
she died.
Hit her? Yes. I've been in those runabouts. What hit her?
The windshield, clearly. I mean, she just went right into it. Or you know, a console.
Oh,
she went right into
the console. I was thinking that too. Watching Nana go back and forth like that. Does anybody else think, why don't we have seatbelts on?
Yes. That's the thing. Yes.
Yeah.
It is so maddening. You're being hurled through space and you don't have what a pilot would have for United Airlines. Like, are you kidding me?
That's how it's always been though, Terry. In every Trek
maddening.
When J.J. Abrams took over and filmed that 2008 feature film, recasting Kirk, Spock, and all those guys, their seatbelts in that film, but no sequels.
Did Enterprise have seatbelts? I wonder if Enterprise had Enterprise. No, maybe
no,
not on the series.
I think it's because it stops you from getting up easily, right?
Yeah,
it's a hindrance.
You should
for
still
filming.
Have them for.
Oh
quite.
My god! Yeah,
you should
for sure. Okay,
all right, anyways. So Kyle Pak is dead, and then Kira becomes very overwhelmed. She's very emotional about this. Starts chanting some Bajoran prayers. And as she's chanting the prayers, we cut over to a corner of the cave. And I love this shot where this hand comes in the foreground.
Yeah, that was a cool shot.
That was a very cool shot. Nice work, Paul.
Terry, do they ever have her speaking in her language at any other point in the series?
I don't know. We'd have to ask her because she would know. I imagine so. I just... I'm rewatching it with you. We'll find out.
Right. We'll find out.
Yeah. She does her Ankaya Ayavasu Komara like that.
Yeah. It almost sounded like Kuchimoya from Beltran. Kuchimoya. From our show. Yeah. It's almost indigenous. I also felt it was interesting because she did not actually have physical tears in this scene, but later she does with the Kai, but here with the alive Kai, with the dead Kai, she doesn't have.
She's in shock.
She's in shock. Yeah,
she's got to remember her prayer lines. So she's really focused on that.
Who knows what's happening?
Yeah, who knows?
I'm just saying it's tough for an actor.
It could be two in the morning.
But guys, this is as a series regular. This is her first emotional scene where she's supposed to cry, right? And I find that that can be very daunting. Daunting to be able, with all those people around you on the set, to get to that position where you have honest freaking waterworks coming out of your eyeballs. That's hard to do. It really is. But I do think she found something later when it was quiet, and that scene in the cave where you have less people running around you, I think that she was able to focus more, I feel. So all right,
well, so she's chanting her Ayakaya Vasu Makaka.
Yes.
And then
Makaka.
Then the hand shows up and Sisko looks over and there's a group of these. They look like homeless aliens. They just look beat up.
They don't.
Yeah.
They look like a mess.
We found some old Klingon uniforms to throw on everybody.
They look like Klingon stuff.
Guys, no.
What?
Not. I don't think so.
They look Klingon-y?
No, they look like the Fremen from Dune is what they look like to me.
I understand that too. But no, there was this sheath part on their shoulders that had
it looked like
the,
they recycled
kind
some
of,
costumes. So
yeah, because I had a costume. You'll see later. I have a costume with that same kind of, I look
shoulder
it's
pad
a way
thingy.
More spectacular kind of an
you
outfit.
You look fabulous,
but
I'm sure.
Thank you. Well, they didn't have me all ripped up and torn up either.
No,
so it was,
Okay. They're definitely ragtag though, Robbie. Yes. So I wouldn't say homeless, but they're ragtag. Yes.
Okay. So they're a mess. And then we go back to ops. Finally, we go back to ops, back to the station. Clearly it's past the 1400 hours that Sisko casually mentioned for no apparent reason in the shuttle.
It's no longer two in the afternoon.
Yes. Odo is very worried about Sisko being late in the scene. And
it's 5:30 right now.
But mostly
right?
because of the Kai.
Yes. The Kai's people are very upset. They want details. They want information. And Dax tells Odo to have the Bajorans station a ship on the Gamma Quadrant side of the wormhole. And then they can go relay, you know, information, whatever they find out. Dax is always
this shot.
On point. Oh, the shot when the things
shot where they're going down. It's Dax and O'Brien going down, and they're talking.
O'Brien and
to
I
Odo.
Are totally chill about the whole thing. Like we're gonna handle it.
No, totally. Yeah. But just the shot on Odo where Odo's
it was cool.
Yeah, you guys are going down.
He's like crouching down.
Yeah, it was. I really like that. We didn't do anything like that on
it
Voyager.
Was cool.
I did like that. Good job, Paul Lynch.
Paul Lynch again.
Yeah,
even though this is your last one, and you're never coming back. But good job.
The good last hurrah.
Yeah,
it is.
I like this episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So we go to the caves again, and we meet Shella, who is kind of their. I guess that's how you pronounce it, right? Shella.
Oh, well, what is this actor's name?
Okay, when he came on screen, I yelled, "Michael Ironside," but it's not Michael Ironside. It's Jonathan Banks.
Jonathan Banks. Oh my God, I love his acting.
He was amazing in what's the one with the meth the meth people.
I did the same thing for my reaction. Breaking Bad. I was like, oh my gosh, what's his name? Oh my
gosh. He played Mike, the hitman.
Solid actor.
Really,
he's very good.
Really good. But I thought it was Michael Ironside because he has that little prosthetic thing on there, right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
That is so funny that you say that.
You know what?
I haven't thought about him forever. And I just saw a movie with Michael Ironside in it.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my gosh, I wonder how he is.
But you know, we didn't even talk about guest stars, Robbie. We forgot to.
Well, we'll talk about him as we go.
We'll talk about, as we see them.
Yeah.
As we see
them. So okay. Jonathan Banks, classy,
Shella.
Amazing Shella. Actor.
Now,
very Shella. Good actor. So Shella wants to know who they are. He asks, Sisko says that they have discovered this wormhole, that they're from Starfleet, and that they're just exploring. And Bashir wants his med kit at one point to help the injured Kira.
Okay, let's talk about that. She was totally fine until the guard actually grabbed her arm in a certain way. And that's when she winced and fell. Because otherwise, I initially didn't see that. I had to rewind it 4 or 5 times because to me, it seemed like a pratfall almost. Like she was trying to do that as a diversionary tactic. Because I thought, oh, they're going to break free. Like she's falling down pretending she's in a lot of pain. And then I saw that her uniform was actually... you know, distressed.
Yeah, it's hard to see because it was so dark in there. Yeah.
Right. But it's there's blood there and there's a cut too, I think. Right.
Yeah. So I noticed there was something before, but it didn't seem like she was reacting.
No,
to
there was no reaction to it. But then the guy grabs her in a certain way on her arm and then she drops down. But it was so sudden to me that I thought, oh, this is a plan. They're planning some type of escape, but it wasn't.
That's interesting. So funny. Yeah. My impression, I thought it felt like, you know, like maybe she should have been directed differently because it looked too big. It looked like overacting.
It looked like it came out of nowhere,
just like,
right?
Yeah.
So really,
but to me, that would be directing because maybe they shot that first and then shot the other.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what
you
I'm
know?
Thinking.
And then they forgot about it, and then somebody should have reminded her.
Well, it's
about
continuity,
her cut,
right?
You know,
it's continuity.
Kind of
like she should have been she should have been gingerly, you know, protecting that the entire time until
holding it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because then. It's confusing to the audience. You don't know what's happening.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
I agree.
All right.
Well, Sisko has explained who they are to Shella, and Bashir wants this med kit to help Kira. And it's very funny. They awkwardly, like, it's another long pause. There's a lot of long,
there's a lot
silent
of pauses. In here.
He asked for
Do you
the
think
med
it could
kit.
Take out like maybe 3 minutes?
Oh, they could have easily.
They could add whatever our scene is going to missing scene. We have time for that for all those pauses.
We do.
Yes. Yeah, for real. Absolutely. So yeah, they Shella nods and then somebody opens it and they start digging through it. And then finally he's like, just give me that, which I thought was funny. It did end funny, the awkward long pause.
It did. And I like it when Bashir has those moments. Like he seems silly. And then when his capabilities need to arise and show up, he definitely takes command. And it's like, right on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Dr. Bashir.
He's great. Bashir gets his case. And then Shella starts to explain about their war, that they're at war, that their enemy is horribly brutal.
Ruthless.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that they are in this prison camp and they don't control the satellites that you know, Sisko dealt with. They have no control over that. And he says, but now that you're here with us, you're going to be considered allies of our people just because you're here with us. And he does say that they have a lot of injured people. Shella says his people have a lot of injuries and that they need a doctor because they don't have a doctor.
Does Shella hold the phaser in this scene? No. Does he hold up the phaser in this scene or not?
He talks about energy weapons.
Yeah. Is that in this scene or later?
I think it is. It's somewhere. Okay. This is a long scene, by the way. This is a really,
it really is.
On and on and on.
Okay. Because.
And that's when he explains that, that they don't.
The weapon is too.
Like an
tame.
Energy.
It doesn't. Yeah. Yes. He goes, is this energy? Is this an energy weapon? He's like, yes. He goes, huh. He goes, the Ennis. Which they are. So it was like, it's sort of like when, if Robbie was to say, the Robbie is hungry, like that. He was talking in third person.
And I talk that way sometimes.
I do too.
The Robbie loves doing this podcast.
What is that about? Oh my God. So, we're all a little nuts.
No, but the way he said it, he goes, the Ennis stopped using this centuries ago because it's not damaging enough. So it sounds like he's talking about the enemy, you know, using new weapons, but he is the Ennis. The other group is the Null Ennis.
Yes.
Right. So was that confusing to you guys
Null.
Too? Yes.
I don't know. Yeah. But he does say that the energy weapons were not damaging enough.
Enough. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So
goodness.
Yes, that is the scene, but we cut over in this long scene. We cut over to Bashir treating
so
Kira
long. Yeah.
And she is in shock. She thinks that Kaiopaka's death was pointless.
Right.
And
she's crying here. There's tears here. I think.
Yes. Tears, tear scene, lots of tears. Sisko arrives and he shares with them that he's made a deal to exchange Bashir's medical help for protection. So these Ennis will protect them if Bashir helps out as a doctor. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly this firefight starts. There's a big shake and this is a giant.
They get attacked.
Yes, they get attacked by the Null Ennis.
The Null Ennis show up. And the only way you can tell the difference
between. They have
helmets. Yeah, they.
Well, this is a giant firefight. I did see Dennis Matalone. I saw Tom Morga.
Me too.
I saw a bunch of
them. I might be wrong. So I erased that reaction. I was like, yes.
So guys, quick interjection from the interwebs. This is really cool. Dennis Matalone, this is one of his favorite episodes of DS9 because Paul Lynch actually said, we have two full shooting days of just fighting. You direct it. He let Matt alone direct. So Dennis, So Dennis was like, you want me to
job.
Do everything? He's like, yep. You do the choreography. You decide what
you
camera angle.
Shots.
You do everything. Okay. And he's like, all right. So he would set something up. He would come over to Paul. And he's like, is that cool? He's like, yeah, of course. Just print it. Let's go. Move on. And Paul was reading a magazine.
Makes sense.
Just chilling out.
Totally makes sense.
See him doing it. Yeah.
But imagine a stunt coordinator allowed to direct the entire day. And it was awesome.
I believe it though, because he was so good.
Yes.
He really was.
Tom Morga. So you do see Dennis Matalone as a background Ennis. So he's on Jonathan Banks' side. And Tom Morga is on the other side. He's Null Ennis. And also from the interwebs, Tom Morga designed all of the weapons, actually. So,
wow.
And I thought,
not Dan Curry.
Not the props master, but he, like the knives and the hand to hand ones, not the energy weapons, but the hand, like the knives.
Yeah,
and things
I know what
right?
you're talking about.
Things.
Wow.
Because
so
Dan
Tom
Curry
Morgan.
Made my bat list. Or made
right.
the bat list.
He's the bat
right?
King.
I shouldn't say mine.
You could say Dan,
because he was really into weapons when he was in the Peace Corps and traveling through Asia. Mm-hmm. So he took all these weapon ideas and combined it. Yeah. Dan's awesome.
Wouldn't it be crazy if Dan Curry was some just, we didn't know his past and he was like an arms dealer that we didn't know about back in the day.
Ninja assassin.
A ninja assassin, Dan Curry.
You're fun to brainstorm with.
All right. We also learned in this scene that this is basically a penal colony is what it is, right? We didn't know that until this scene that those satellites have nothing.
What does penal mean?
It's like the prison system.
It's
not
what you think.
It's not a penis colony.
Yeah.
It is a...
Although that wouldn't be a bad idea.
I'm going to say this. Prison colony.
That's a totally different kind of colony.
I forgot. It makes sense now.
Wait.
Sorry.
We skipped over at the end of this giant firefight.
Yes.
Kira does a magic roll across the floor of the cave.
Oh, she does.
Yes. Grabs a phaser.
Now that
she's been healed by Bashir,
suddenly
she can do the
acrobatic roll.
But she shoots the rocks.
She shoots the rocks up above, and it hits the guys. But I wanted to say they all had helmets on. Why did they get hurt?
Well,
they have these giant helmets.
They're thin helmets.
They're only for show and or for
they're
for,
only for show.
Yeah, they're not for protection. Did you see there was one background Nolan is because it wasn't just you had one. The rocks hit him, but there were residual rocks that came down afterwards. So one of them was after they were lying on the ground, one of the rocks came and landed right on his crotch. It went
on. No.
But it's still a fake rock, right? I mean, it's not going to be real rock.
But he reacted but like still. It was a real one, right?
Probably. He's like,
it might have still hurt.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, and even if it's
especially
a fake
if you
rock,
don't see it coming.
No, and it's coming right at your privates.
I mean, you guys don't wear cups to work, do you?
No, we don't.
I'm wearing one right now for the podcast. I wear protection.
Robbie has a cup on all the time.
I always wear protection.
I am wearing a bra, but it is not cup worthy. I'll tell you that right now. It is not there's no protection from falling rocks. Even if they're just sci-fi rocks.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Robbie. I have an image of you going everywhere, wearing a groin cuff everywhere you go. Oh, like you're at
all
work.
All I'm thinking is sweaty.
Directing.
Yes, I definitely wear it when I'm directing.
Yes,
directing.
This is me. Knock, knock.
Yep. Dun, dun, dun. So these guys with helmets, they all get crushed. The Noel Ennis, the remaining ones scatter and they retreat.
Yeah.
And then as they're checking casualties, they go around and checking. Everybody seems dead.
Yeah.
Everybody.
They seem dead.
They seem dead. But Kira sees something off in a distance and it's a silhouette of Opaka. And Opaka is alive.
Yeah.
Now, did they just leave her laying on the ground? Did they bury her?
Yes, they did.
Because remember, when the Ennis captured them, they took them to their headquarters. And of course, Kai was already dead. They just left. I mean, what are they going to do?
Just left.
It's a dead body.
Wait a minute. So. I just want to say, too, with all of our experience now with The Walking Dead and the whole zombie things, I was like going...
Oh yeah, this is a zombie.
Look like. Yeah. Yes, exactly. She's
a zombie
episode. Now she is possessed. I've been waiting for this moment. No.
All right. So a little later, the bodies are being dragged away and they ask Kai Opaka, what does she remember?
Yeah.
And she remembers some of the crash. She remembers, you know, some of the space battle, but Sisko asks if she remembers being dead and she just stares and walks away.
Yeah.
Another awkward silent
pause
there. Yeah.
Yeah. At this point, have the soldiers all gotten up already now?
They start to get up.
They start reanimating right now.
Yeah.
They start reanimating?
Yeah. So she walks away like a zombie. Doesn't
Jeffrey Combs will understand that reference. Oh, sorry.
Yes, exactly.
So sorry, Bashir wants to use the runabout's computer to do a full analysis to try to figure out what happened to Kai Opaka. Mm-hmm. And that's when suddenly the dead prisoners that are laying all over the ground.
Yeah.
Start to come back to life, but they're over near Kai Opaka. So part of me was like, does she have some
magic?
Oh,
does she have the power?
Right.
That's what I thought, because they're all over by her.
Yeah, yeah,
I went there too. 100%.
Me too. 100%. Me too. Yeah. Didn't know about the microbes yet. So yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. But the corpses all wake up and Bashir says, it's okay. It's all right. Mm-hmm. I guess he's talking. I think he was talking to the dead people as they awoke or something.
Yeah.
But our zombie scene, it's the zombie episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We go to the runabout Rio Grande where Dax and O'Brien are on the search, but they're out in the Gamma Quadrant finding nothing. And they love working
with him.
Oh, you guys were awesome. I loved whenever we went back to the, it was great.
He's so easy to work with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your chemistry together was really fun. We're in the runabout. Dax and O'Brien do discover, you know, they find the warp eddy from the runabout's, you know, warp trail, I guess. And so they can tell generally the direction that they went, but it's into an uncharted binary star system. Mm-hmm. And O'Brien says, well, I guess it's time to chart it. And Dax agrees and off they go to follow that warp eddy.
Right.
So they got a little bit of something, but nothing solid yet.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the cave, Bashir sees that he's analyzed with his medical tricorder, I guess. He finds that they all have these biomechanical cells these microbes in their cells and that they have died many times before. And then Bashir wants to go back to the shuttle to see if he can get the computer working to try to analyze. He wants to go back and Shella offers Bashir protection. So he sends a couple of guys with Bashir heading back to the shuttle. But did you notice the two protection guys that were walking? I think one of them was Tarek, who was on our show.
No, I think it?
Yes. I froze it. I went back. It's kind of dark in the cave.
Okay, I have to go watch it again.
You should get credits.
Yeah, Tarek is one of our regular background guys. He ended up getting some lines on our show, but he was there the entire seven seasons with us.
Oh, all that's seven cool. Seasons. Yeah, I noticed all of our stand-ins throughout. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was, I think one of them was Tarek, the two bodyguards that went off with Bashir.
Okay.
But they continue in the cave. Shella explains the history of this war, that the Ennis had fought the Nol Ennis for generations, and they can't even remember how the fight started.
They don't know the reason why it started any longer. He's like, land, water, it could have been anything. He doesn't even know.
But he says, now we fight for vengeance.
Vengeance.
So they're both driven by vengeance without any, they don't even know why it all started. So,
No.
Kira gets really angry. Do you remember when she starts telling him they should fight differently? And she
you
got to be more strategic and you got to do this and that. And Sisko tries to stop her, but she doesn't listen, which that surprised me.
Yeah.
Like, she was like on a tear.
But
she was on a tear.
Well, you know, it doesn't surprise me because they don't have they're still working on their relationship, right? Their working relationship. And we're still discovering who all of us are, right?
Yeah.
So that to me wasn't that surprising. And now think about too, that she'd just gone through her, like we're talking about like Jesus dying for her.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. And that that's Opaka massive. Died that's... in front of her and came back. So that's like a lot of stuff to process. And now she's back alive and
And she's
how are we gonna get out of here? The shuttlecraft. Yeah. So she's understandably freaked out.
She's freaked out, but she's taken it to the nth level in terms of she's being very aggressive right now, right? She's and then it's really Sisko that
she
says
wants to
like
fix
this
it.
Is she wants, she's like
and
this
she
is
wants
not,
to fight, which is part of the story. She's like passionate about fighting,
right?
Yes.
Which comes which back is the through later. Line, but it's interesting because Sisko says this is not your this. No, it wasn't her. That
no,
says
Kai
it. It was
Opaka says
this is not your war, Kira. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
and that's after. But I'm just addressing what Robbie was just saying about. I'm surprised that she didn't listen to Sisko.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just offering that I
makes
think
sense.
She wouldn't have listened to anybody.
Anyone,
like,
it wouldn't have happened.
Like all of us, you know.
She just went through a traumatic
we've all
situation.
Been in those
situations. Yeah, of course. Makes sense. Entirely.
But she does listen when Kai Opaka says, this is not your war, Kira, or not your fight, or whatever she says.
Right.
And then she suddenly does.
Shelad does defend himself. He says, like, Major, we used to defend ourselves better. We had perimeters, counterattacks, preemptive strikes, but, you know, we realized it was all pointless.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, when you cease to fear death, the rules of the war change. You'll understand as the years begin to pass, Major. So he's basically saying, you guys are stuck here just as long as we are. Yeah. You're not going to be leaving.
Yeah.
Well, Sisko does offer to transport them all off, right?
Yes.
He makes that offer in this scene. And he just wants a ceasefire long enough to wait for a rescue. And then he'll help them get off. And that Shella says, you know, I'll finally be able to die for the last time. And he really wants this cycle to end. And so he says he'll talk to the Nol about a ceasefire. He'll see if they are willing to talk. So. Yeah. So it seems like Sisko's logic and, you know, they're starting to...
Did this part remind you from the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the men from the mountain, the troops from the mountain that were the ghosts that could not finally find peace because they betrayed the king? Do you remember this scene?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So they were like, you know, they were told, okay, if you fight with us, I will then absolve you of your crimes and you can now finally die. Yeah. You can go to Valhalla, wherever you want to go. So,
oh, wow. Yeah.
So this is kind of what I felt about this. Nice. Like Shelah was really like... I'll take it, you know, because he wants that. He's sick of this thing.
They need relief.
They want, they need a little bit of a peace.
Well, speaking of relief, we go to the runabout Rio Grande because we need a little relief from this cave scenes. These cave scenes are
long.
Yeah.
Every one of them goes on and on. And I was so glad to get back on the
dark
Rio Grande.
Dark and cold.
Yeah.
Those were hard scenes to shoot in there.
To shoot.
For that very reason.
And also, Terry, because no the daylight. Distance, the distance from our trailers and from your trailers to stage 18 is it's like a city. It's like a New York City block. It's like, what the? Yeah,
you definitely get your 10,000 steps.
Oh, my God. You and you remember when you forgot something in your trailer and you're almost to stage 18, you're like, oh, well, then I guess I'll go without, because you weren't going to walk back to go get it. You're done.
Even the bathroom. It's like, you better go to the bathroom before you go.
Before, yes.
Because even the public restrooms on that street we were all on are far away from 18.
Exactly. Yeah. They weren't even next to them. Nope.
No.
Yep.
So we're back on the Rio Grande with Dax and O'Brien, and they're still trying to find them. O'Brien says he's getting frustrated. He says, you know, this is like trying to find a needle in a haystack. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly goes, light bulb moment. Mm-hmm. He thinks he can make a magnet. How do you find a needle with the magnet? And that's when he invents this word, the magnetomer. He decides to make some kind of giant magnet tech thing called a magnetomer.
A differential magnetomer.
Okay. Yes. You know what I love, though? These kind of moments are like what I love about acting, when you feel like you're a little kid and you're making it up as you go along. Like, okay, you guys are the cowboys. I'm the Indian. Yeah. And okay, you know, that bush is Mount Rushmore.
Yes.
But that's how it felt. I love the energy in this scene from both of you. And your reactions to him explaining, you were very fun to watch. It was great.
For me, though, Terry, because on Voyager, I had so much technobabble. When I watch DS9 episodes, I always watch all of you guys when you're starting to say some technobabble. And I'm always like, it's almost like I'm watching a sporting event.
You make it to the
please
end.
Just get to the end.
So you know the feeling.
Because when you had to repeat differential magnetomer, you did it perfectly. I'm like, oh yes, Terry did it. Yes, she did the triple sow cow. It's almost like Olympic ice skating. She completed it. She landed it. So that's me.
Yeah.
It's a 10.
It's a 10.
This is where this, Garrett, is where we cut back to the planet, and there's Bashir. Underneath the console.
Okay, sorry. Guys working on stuff, very sexy.
That was
very sexy.
Team Bashir.
Working with his hands.
Team Bashir.
Things. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Engineering. Yeah. Smart. Yeah. Love
it. Like when he gets it going, and then he stands up and he says, nice work, Julian, to himself.
Should thank yourself.
Yes. Yeah. It was very funny. Okay, so after Bashir fixes the computer and does his sexy manly work, we cut back to Sisko and Shella talking. Shella says that Zlango, the Nol Ennis leader, has agreed to a ceasefire, and he's going to discuss Sisko's proposals. Mm-hmm. And Kira is also there, and he says something about, well, you know, if your commander wants you to come along for security, I guess, you know, you can accompany us. And Sisko goes, Major Kira will be staying here with the Kai. Shella's response, oh, what a shame. It was so funny to me.
You liked
that
one,
didn't you? So sarcastic and snarky and just dripping with sarcasm. It was great.
He's hilarious. Yeah, he does that stuff spot freaking really on good. All the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shella and Sisko leave.
This is the biggest point of, I guess, character development for Major Kira so far, I would have to say. Because, I mean, this is basically Kai sort of telling Kira to look within, you know, and sort of like do an assessment of
There's
who she is.
There's a bunch of shame happening for Kira.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
and, I really felt for her.
Oh, my gosh. And really, the
called
minute...
Called out.
Yeah, because it's
Well,
it's
she feels
all about,
called out because Opaka says... Do you see yourself in these people?
In these people, the fighting. Yes.
Do you see it with the fighting people? And Kira's like, no, no. She's in total denial.
She's like, it's not the same. It's not the same. I've been fighting for a valiant cause or a worthy cause, but these people are just fighting for nothing. You know. Thanks. Yes. I appreciate that.
Or
a valiant.
Or a magnetomer cause, if you will.
A differential magnetomer cause. I mean, these are causes that we fight for.
We fight for these things.
Okay.
But she's like in total denial that's not who I am.
Yeah.
And it's a very relatable moment.
But she's ashamed, though.
When
she's
made a mistake and we're being called out, and there's a part of our ego that's in denial that doesn't want to see it. Mm-hmm. And it's very relatable for all of us to be in that moment.
Definitely.
I think.
Most definitely. I mean, this is a huge teaching moment for everybody, you know, when you're watching this episode.
When you're watching this episode and she's in denial And then whenever you guys are out there listening, if you're in denial, have someone grab your paw.
Your paw on your right. It's always your left ear that has to be touched.
So Kyle Paca grabs
her paw. Make sure you wash your hands first.
Yes. Or her ear or whatever you want to call it. And Kira just collapses sobbing.
Yep. So, but see, when she did that, number one, I said, good job, Nana Visitor. But then I started thinking back to the pilot and I started thinking, now I want Avery Brooks to reshoot that scene where she touched his paw, because I felt like not the cry, but I feel like he should have had some sort of like, whoa, you know, moment. Like, you're feeling my energy. You know what's going on inside of me. And it kind of, it was almost like, it was a moment.
Everybody
that
has a different paw.
I guess.
It's true. And I suppose. And he did get it by the end. The whole point was he wasn't getting it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense.
He was struggling.
Okay, yes,
he was in, he was trapped in that time and they kept saying it and saying it.
Yes.
And, you know, and we've all had those walls. I certainly have. I mean, decades of my life, relationships repeated where you keep making the same mistake. And when you finally get the breakthrough, it's like, whoa, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you wasted any time. It's just how long it took you to get the information.
What do they say? The universe keeps teaching you the same lesson until you're ready to learn it. Like, you're just going to keep.
Yeah. It's going to get the size of a billboard. It's going to knock you out and send you down a rabbit hole if you aren't ready to get it.
Yeah.
I just love this is
the moment.
Can we read this? Yeah. Opaka says, don't deny the violence inside of you, Kira. Only when you accept it can you move beyond it. Kira says, I've known nothing but violence since I was a child. Opaka says, in the eyes of the prophets, we are all children. Bajor has much to learn from peace. Kira says, I'm afraid the prophets won't forgive me. And Opaka says, they're just waiting for you to forgive yourself, which is... it hit me hard when I was watching this. So I definitely started tearing up a little bit because we all have these moments, you know, we all deal with these moments as human beings
where absolutely.
You deny and you don't forgive yourself and you're so hard on yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think that everyone can learn from, that you have to forgive yourself.
I was just listening to this really interesting podcast from Mel Robbins and, you know, liking ourselves. Number one, that kindness to ourselves is the true first step to really healing all this stuff.
Yep.
It's not going to the spa or taking the walk. It's doing little acts of kindness to ourselves.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But forgiving yourself, accepting and not denying is the hardest thing to do, though. You see what I'm saying? When you're caught up in life like that and you're set in your ways and you're set in your thinking, it's almost... Oh, it's like you do need someone to grab your paw. You need someone to say, hey, stop.
Yeah.
Smell the roses. What are you doing? Because you can't see it without assistance, I feel. Like you have to, there has to be someone, a catalyst, a spark plug that actually gets you to go, whoa, what the heck am I doing right now? You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
To shake you out of the
funk. And you know what? Here's the thing too. If you remind, this is what I've been doing, if this is of any help.
Yes.
But I remind myself when they say be your own best friend, that doesn't really help because it's not actionable.
Right.
But when you think of it, like when you're trying to forgive yourself, imagine whatever act or thing you said or did, if your best friend had done it, how would you react? So then try to turn that on yourself and say, well, if I would forgive my best friend and have empathy and compassion for them, I certainly can do that for myself.
For myself,
And the more you practice it that way, it doesn't mean that you just can't change the past. So the only way to move forward is to learn how to forgive yourself. And if the only way to learn how to do that is that you would do it for somebody else you love, then go there.
Then go that way. Yeah. Use that avenue to get to that point.
As your catalyst.
As the catalyst. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Of course.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. All right. We go to the runabout Rio Grande next. And Dax and O'Brien are there. They're analyzing the probe results, but nothing. They don't really have anything. O'Brien's ready to give up when Dax suddenly sees something. She has discovered that there is a moon, and there is, I guess, some signs from the moon.
How do they say that? Hysteresis? The hysteresis curve.
Hysteresis curve.
Did I say that?
You said
sure?
It.
The computer said it.
No, the computer said it. Yeah. Actually. Oh, okay. Never mind. Hysteresis.
I'm thinking, I should be able to correct you if I said it. It must be in my body somewhere. No.
You know, Major Barrett Roddenberry took that that hurdle away from you. Yes. So she said hysteresis curve. So there is a 0012 fluctuation.
That's what she finds. Yeah. Yep. She finds that fluctuation. Yeah. Dax realizes that it's a moon, and both of you guys are smart, and you know you're putting all these pieces together. Smart Dax to figure out the moon and the fluctuation thing.
I do Ryan like the pairing.
The magnetomer. Right?
I love this pairing. I love the pairing.
I'd love to see you guys together a lot.
This is the first time. Thank you. I think. Me too. Am I right? This is the first time we see these two
we're
working
really doing
together.
Something.
Where you're you're interacting off of each other.
It's and a good combo.
It's a good combo. Agreed.
Yeah. Thank you. Uh huh.
So they've discovered the hysteresis curve situation on this moon. We go down to the moon, and now we've got this giant torchlit gathering by the shuttle. Yeah. Those are some big,
candles.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just like, who came up with those?
Like outdoor heaters or something. I don't know. They look like giant circular. They go 20 feet in the air.
Yeah. For that ragtag group of people, I'm surprised they came up with those awesome fancy torches.
Yeah. Yes.
That's for sure.
But they're by the shuttle. There's a fun moment where Bashir compares Sisko's plan to a jailbreak, and Sisko gets very insulted. Mm-hmm. And he tells Sisko basically puts Bashir in his place, like, don't teach me about the Prime Directive, mister.
Yeah.
And it's very funny.
It is
to see Bashir trying
he backtracks
so bad.
Fast.
It's like, he's just like,
he's just trying to make conversation.
He is. He's so innocent.
Every time he tries to get involved, everybody pushes him away, poo-poos him, like, shh, quiet, go away.
Yeah.
Okay, so after Bashir gets put in his place by Sisko, basically the two sides start arguing their case about this war. And,
isn't there a second where you think, this is all going to work out.
Yeah, you kind of think Sisko is convincing them. He's trying to kind of, you know, mediate this
discussion
of trust. This, talking about the history, and they're all stuck in the old stories and how they can't trust each other. But you think that Sisko is going to reassure them and reassure this guy Zlango and Shella and get them all together.
Zlanko, did you notice? Zlanko asks about the Federation, right? And Shella's the one that sort of throws it away. He's like, what does it matter to us, Zlanko? And Zlanko's like, it matters to me. And Sisko says, the Federation is made up of over 100 planets who have allied themselves for mutual scientific, cultural, and defensive benefits. And in the interwebs, this is one of the few occasions where the Federation is explained in all Star Trek. We literally rarely ever see this. And this is one of the, you know, I think you can count on one hand how many times someone actually explains what the Federation is
simply,
specifically.
Concisely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right here. Sisko says it.
Well, he explains it, but it does not reassure them. And Zlango and Shella start threatening each other.
Yeah.
A hand-to-hand fight breaks out.
Yeah, because they said no weapons except for old school
the blades.
Yeah, the blades.
So another Dennis Madelon special happens.
Oh yes,
the hand-to-hand stuff. It was like
that was huge.
Yeah,
yeah. What was that movie with the where they were fighting? All the sword fighting was super cool looking. The 300 or something.
Yeah, the 300.
The 300. Mm-hmm. This reminded me of like the DS9 version of the 300.
The 300.
Stabbing and
Or
Game of Thrones or something. Right. It was very cool.
So you notice when the Null Ennis guy, which was Tom Morga, holds the weapon up and throws it at Sisko, and Bashir dives and knocks him out of the way, right?
Yeah.
So that was the weapon that he made. He made that from scratch. He MacGyvered that. Yeah. So he literally grabbed, like, you know, a toilet plunger, a round styrofoam ball for the bottom, and then this funky little top, you know, and he glued it together, and that's what he threw at Sisko.
That's funny. Yeah,
that was Tom Morga special. Well,
Bashir flies through the air, knocks Sisko away from this.
Our man
weapon.
Bashir.
Look at all the stuff he does. He's amazing.
Amazing.
He is amazing.
Superman.
Jinx.
You owe me a Coke?
He saves him, and Bashir does say at the end, after he saves him, he goes, "I'm sorry, Commander, but I've discovered we can't afford to die here. Not even once.
It's
a great tagline.
It's a great tagline, because he could have ended with, we can't afford to die here, but he throws the not even once in there.
Yes.
All right, we're back on the runabout.
Yep.
And there's O'Brien and Dax, and they have found this moon. Dax does read life forms. Some appear to be human. At first, I was like, there's only one human, a Sisko. And then I realized, oh, our hero Bashir is also human. So, yes, couple humans down there. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly the satellites scan them like they did to Sisko and his gang. So O'Brien says, let's pull back out of orbit for safety.
Yeah.
And
you guys send a probe? Wasn't there a probe sent out?
Yes, he does in a minute. He reads, he reads that the damping field is blocking 99% of the transporter signal. So that only leaves him 1% to work with, but he's going to try to see if he can transmit through that tiny window, the 1%. Yeah. And we go back down to the moon. Bashir is explaining that the microbes will only work on this planet. Yeah. If they're removed from this environment, everybody's going to die.
Yeah. No bueno.
No bueno.
No bueno. So they're all stuck there, including Kai.
Yeah.
Because Sisko asks about Kai, but before Bashir answers, suddenly O'Brien makes a call, asks if it's safe, if they're safe. He says he can't beam him out quite yet, give him a little more time, and Sisko wants to talk to the Kai.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to the cave where they go and talk to Apaka.
Yeah.
And she says to them that she's going to stay here.
Yeah, they don't even have to say anything to her. She says right off the bat, I'm staying. Yeah.
She's staying.
Flips out about this. She's like, what? Yeah. No. You're not staying. No, wrong choice. But she's like, no, I know my mission. My mission is to be here. My mission is to help these people finally find peace. Right.
Yeah.
And actually, if you consider Star Trek Online, the game Peace, they do find peace in the game. Kai does broker peace between these two people, and she converts them to the Bajoran religion as well.
In the game. That's fascinating.
Yeah, which is super cool. Yeah.
I love Apaka's line in this scene where she says, they don't know how to do anything else but die.
But die.
They've forgotten how to live.
Mm-hmm. I love that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true. It's so relatable. Like, you know, for people when we get stuck in a story or a repeated pattern that we forget how to truly live. Our life and live it with joy and live it with optimism and hope. Mm. And we get stuck in this dark place. So I love that line.
It's a good line.
Me too.
Yeah. We go back to the runabout. O'Brien is trying to think about how to open up this hole, this 1%, a little bit more to transport them out.
Dax suggested a photon torpedo to destroy one of the satellites. O'Brien's like, but you know, it's a defense network. It'll probably compensate for that. And that's when he sends the probe.
He thinks of the way. He calls down, I got away. Great. Yeah, we don't know
that
exactly.
We work together. That's what I like about you guys working with him.
Yes,
you He's guys an came engineer, up with the I'm a scientist, and we need each other to find the answers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's no ego about it.
It feels that way. It feels like it's true teamwork.
It's teamwork without ego. You're right. Egoless teamwork.
We go back to the moon. Bashir feels real compassion for the dilemma of these prisoners that they keep dying. He says he thinks he can reprogram the microbes so they wouldn't live with this repeating death story forever and they could finally die. He thinks he could do that before they leave. And Shella gets really excited about that. And for a minute you think like, oh, Shella wants to, you know, to move past this, this vengeance thing. Mm-hmm. But instead you realize he just wants to do this so he can kill all the Null.
Right.
It's the ultimate
weapon.
Still
hasn't learned the lesson. Yeah.
Still hasn't learned the lesson.
Oh my goodness. And here's what was bothering me. They're fighting to be right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm right. Yeah. You're wrong. Instead of trying to see the other person's point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's never going to work. It doesn't work in any relationship. It doesn't work in love relationships or friendships. You can't
You're just
going
to repeat the fighting if you have to be right.
You're never going to get out of the loop. No. Yeah.
Isn't there a saying like, you know, you can have peace or you can be right, but you can't have both or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you want to be right, then be right, you know, but it's not going to be easy. And if you want to have peace, you got to let go of being right sometimes.
Yeah.
But you see that dynamic a lot in couples where they're fighting and they're and it's always
but
like
you have to explain it. You do. You can't but just say, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? That's right. Not enough. You need to say, look, I need to understand your point of view. You need to understand mine so that we can come to a compromise. And I think that's where, you know, a lot of communication gets disrupted in the world.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, back on the runabout, O'Brien launches this probe. It tricks their defenses. It does work. It opens up a transporter hole. And as our threesome down on the planet say goodbye, the enemies just start fighting again.
Yeah. You hear an explosion.
And Opaka tells Sisko that their paths will cross again.
Their paw. Isn't this what she said? Not path, but paw.
She does?
Yeah.
Our paw will...
Yeah, the paw, you know, the paw movement on the ear, like our paw, our energies or whatever, our spirits, our paw, but your paw will cross mine again, not path. Yeah, paw.
Oh, interesting. I didn't catch that. I thought it was path that she
said.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Paw. Yeah. It's so crazy because every time you watch an episode, if you rewatch it again, you will find something that you did not see the first time. That's how every Star Trek episode is, always.
Yeah, or almost every movie.
Almost every time. Yeah, I would say if I watch an episode six times, I will find six new things with it every time. Every subsequent watching, I find.
How nice of you. You have so much abundance of time that you can watch.
How do you have time to watch anything six times? I can barely watch anything once.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. Good Lord.
I'm a sci-fi nerd. I like watching things over and over again.
All right. Sorry. So their paw is going to cross again, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. She'll be back maybe. And
thinking how? Yeah. How is she right?
And then they beam out and they energize. And then you hear the fighting. It stays on a close up of Kai Opaka. Mm. And you hear the fighting. And she just sort of looks off camera like, oh, Jesus.
The work I have to do. Yeah.
That's the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's the end. I was like waiting for another scene. I don't know why. It felt like it felt abrupt to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
And in the interwebs, they talked about, you know, all
the
different
people.
They
seem so okay about leaving her. What's that? They were like,
I know.
Talk.
Yeah. Yeah. The interwebs talks about, and originally there wasn't the Ennis and the Noel Ennis. It was the Cardassians and another humanoid group that were left on that planet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then they changed it. And then they were like, okay, so who do we have staying behind? And they had all these different, you know, recurring characters that we're thinking of bringing along, and they said, "Oh, we'll pick the Kai because she's the least, you know, used or something like that of recurring characters." So it was just this random selection.
Oh wow,
yeah, and that's how it happened. But it was kind of abrupt. It's sort of like now you're done. She's now the Mother Teresa of the Moon people. Now, you know, she has to fix things there.
Of the Moon people. But you know what? Yeah. They do know where she is now, though.
They do. Yes. They can go back anytime. So,
but it. Yes. Bothered me watching it because at the end it felt like, how are they going to know if she's in trouble? They didn't even leave her communicator. Somebody just get tossed her one of their comm badges? Like, felt like, don't leave her just high.
That
should have
been Bashir. Bashir should have went like, he should have like, Kai, take this, and he throws the comm badge to her.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love it. I just love your delivery just then.
Yeah.
Kai, take this. Like something, it's an anime.
Yes.
Oh, Bashir's everything. He's even an anime character.
He's unbelievable.
He's 007.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you want to go even deeper into Voyager and/or Deep Space Nine, check us out at Patreon. We have tiers ranging from $3 to $260 a month. Fun perks, including all bonus segments, like our ratings of the episodes, winner and loser picks for the episodes, our ideas for a missing scene for each episode, and answering Patreon member submitted questions.
You can watch the video version of the podcast and see reaction clips from the hosts as they watch and react to the episodes in real time. Plus, you can participate in Patreon polls for the bonus segments.
We have guest interviews, monthly blooper reels, birthday shout outs on the podcast. You can even get autographs and cool swag mailed right to you.
Plus, we have monthly Zooms where you can join us and Armin or Terry for a relaxed discussion and Q&A. Go to www.patreon.com/thedeltaflyers/membership to check out what we have to offer and pick a tier.
Garrett, what is your theme or moral of this episode?
It's from the scene with Kai and Kira. Clearly, yeah. it's you have to learn to forgive yourself. You have to, you know, you have to learn to accept things to be able to move on, to not deny. It's so easy to deny what's right in front of you, right? Yeah. And you have to say, okay, I acknowledge this. I acknowledge this. I accept that this is happening. I forgive myself. I am a human being that is always capable of making mistakes, and I'm not going to be that hard on myself. So that's my message for this episode.
Nice. Terry, what about you?
Well, I wrote, you can't enlighten someone who doesn't have self-awareness.
Oh, there you go.
Even then, changing yourself takes an enormous amount of energy. I mean, even though now that Kira is enlightened, if she's going to change, which knowing this is the very beginning of the entire series, she still has a lot of struggles.
Yeah.
To follow through with that enlightenment, and our how we learn things isn't linear up. It can be, I'm doing great. Oh, shoot. I did terrible today. And then I did a little better the next day. And then, so we have a journey to watch Kira Nerys go on. This is just the very first awakening of her moment. So even though we might have these awakenings, it doesn't mean that, now I'm done. Kira, I'm enlightened.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Robbie, I agree with both of your themes. I mean, I wrote down, you have to face your past in order to move beyond it.
I like that.
Yeah, I think for everybody, for Kira, she has to look at who she has been and take responsibility for that, take ownership of it, accept it, forgive yourself. But you can't move, you can't make any change until you face the past and deal with it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and that ownership is really painful.
Yes.
The acceptance and forgiveness, once you're on that path, it's a relief.
Yeah, some good thoughts in this.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to our recap and discussion of the Battle Lines episode with lovely Terry Farrell and Robbie Duncan McNeil and myself. So join us next time when we will tackle the episode, The Storyteller. See you then. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.